Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or the property. It's the location and neighborhood, Dalton.
If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home.
And when we say in-depth, we're talking deep in-depth. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide.
They also have details about local schools with test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent.
So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, a home, this is everything you need to know all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework. The Dale Jr. Download is brought to you by ZipRecruiter.
You going to any concerts this summer, man?
I am. I'm seeing a concert in June. Hardy and Kit Moore.
Love Hardy.
In Charlotte. I was so stressed getting the tickets. I'm going to be front row. I'm in the pit. When these tickets go out, man, I am online as soon as tickets open. I don't want to miss a thing.
Yeah, you know, you got to act quick.
Yes.
And when you want the best, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you're hiring for a business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. Mm. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Dale Jr.
ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Dale Jr. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/Dale Jr. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
You always remember your first, and we know in NASCAR that usually means that we're talking about a driver's first time win, but that is not the case today on DJD Reloaded. We're going much further back in time to a first start in the series, and we're talking about that this week because of Bubba Pollard on the Dale Jr. Download and everything that he experienced this past weekend at Richmond, getting his first Xfinity Series start, and it really got us thinking, right, about the emotion of this moment, the importance of the moment, and how many drivers probably have a different opinion and perspective of that moment. And we got quite the crew to talk about this today. We got Kelly Earnhardt Miller joining us in studio today. She's given some of these drivers their first shots. And how about an extensive driver lineup? Listen to this. We got Mark Martin, Michael Waltrip, and we also have Austin Cindric joining us today. Guys, it truly is. There is a first time for everything, and that is certainly the case for DJD Reloaded. So let's go.
The following is a production of Dirty Mo Media.
Welcome into another episode of DJD Reloaded.
That countdown to E-Day was very nauseating. It's like walking up to a cliff. You get up there and you look down and you're like, holy shit.
We went dancing and all kinds.
Dancing?
Of, oh, yeah.
Damn.
Where do I go? I ain't know where to go.
Welcome inside for another episode of DJD Reloaded here from the Bojangles studio. I'm your host, Carla Gebhardt. I have the honor, the privilege of being joined by the CEO of Dale Jr. Companies and the woman who runs the building for Junior Motorsports, Kelly Earnhardt Miller. Kelly, appreciate you joining me as the co-host today of this show. And I just want to first go back to this weekend, and you got to watch Bubba Pollard, right? First Xfinity Series start at Richmond. What were the emotions of just kind of sitting back and watching him experience everything?
Yeah, super happy to be here with you. And, you know, it's just awesome. Richmond's such a great place to see somebody with their first start. It's a track that, you know, usually is forgiving to those first timers. And just, you know, knowing Bubba and his story and everything that he's accomplished in the late model world, you know, just to see him get this opportunity, and thanks to Ream for that, for making that happen, you know, it's just incredible. And it's what Junior Motorsports is about. It's about those giving them those opportunities, whether it's their first time or whether they get many opportunities to do it, and just see that succession and see them succeed. So, and Bubba is just a fitting person, just such a great personality.
Yeah, and we know short track fans love him, right? Yes. They really showed out at Richmond. But this is kind of his first impression to some other fans out there. And listen, impressed. P6 at Richmond. I don't think it gets much better than
Best
that for a driver.
Had.
I mean, that's amazing. What does that say to you about, I mean, potential for him, right? He's 37 years old, but there's still a lot of potential there, a lot of runway.
Yeah, I think, you know, for him, I mean, if I'm an owner looking at the opportunity to put him in a car, he's got the fan base, right? Super pumped to be there and had a lot of fan support. He sold a lot of T-shirts. That was something that we were talking about prior to his start. You know, those kinds of things just ran off with him. So, and the fact that he's seasoned, you know, he gets in there, runs P6, first start. And he talked about on the download the differences in the cars and the weight and the heaviness and all of those kinds of things. So he had challenges to overcome, and he overcame them in a matter of those laps and finished sixth. So, you know, if I'm an owner looking at that versus, you know, thinking about somebody who hasn't had the seasoned career that he's had in short track racing, man, I don't see how you can look away from that.
Yeah, right. Truly amazing results there. So we mentioned all the drivers that we have on this show to weigh in on this topic of a driver's first start in the National Series. So let's go ahead and bring in one of those drivers now. He's a two-time Daytona 500 winner. You also see him on NASCAR on Fox, Michael Waltrip. Let's bring him in. Michael, I want you to briefly just kind of take us back to Charlotte in 1985 when you got your first Cup Series start. What do you remember most about that moment?
Just how big of a deal it was to me, because I'd only run like a 200-mile race in a four-cylinder baby grand car, and now I'm in this big old Cup car with a 350 engine in it, and we're going to go 600 miles. And I really had no idea everything I didn't know, but I just knew that it was a big moment for me in my career. And Richard Petty had suggested that I go find somebody to give me a ride in a Cup car. He said, "You're messing with those baby grands. You don't need to be doing that. Go get a real big car and see what it's all about." And I just remember so vividly thinking, "I'm here. It's finally happening for me," and how happy I was about that.
Was there a lot of pressure leading up to that moment just the week before for you? What were some of the emotions that you were feeling back then?
We tested a couple weeks before, and I had good speed, even though I had no idea what I was doing. And had never, you know, had a car with that much power on a track that big. But the testing went well, and I had to qualify in on time, obviously. And, you know, just went out there on the first day of qualifying. It was when they did the four lap thing, you know, and like Indy averaged the four laps. And so my first lap was good. And by the fourth lap, I looked like, I didn't look like I knew what I was doing. The tires got a little bit worn and I was falling off the pace pretty rapidly, but we came back in second day qualifying and I think qualified 19th, if I remember correctly. We had a really good run there. And so just everything I did, throughout that week, it just gained confidence. I began to feeling better and better about my ability to run one of these cars and run with these guys. And so, you gotta think about all the stuff I had going on. I'd moved in with Kyle Petty, to get down to North Carolina to get an opportunity to go racing. And I was living with Richard Petty at the time that I made this start. Dale was my buddy, and he was out there. Daryl's my brother, and he's trying to win a race. So I guess the main thing I remember thinking is just don't screw anything up, you know, especially don't mess anything up for these guys. And, you know, it just was a little bit of pressure, but I felt really good about where I was with my my ability to drive one of these cars.
Take us through the race and the results there. What ended up happening? We kind of look back a little bit. Was there a transmission issue? And after that, kind of how did you feel after that?
Well, I think the takeaway was I fell back and I was running. I might have been running last. I don't know. By the time everything shook out after a few laps. But then I began to get better and run better lap times. And all throughout the 600 miles, I think I broke a transmission with about 100 to go. But all throughout the day, it was just steady progression. I didn't get in the wall. I didn't do anything dumb. That was my main goal. And I ran competitively. And so when the transmission broke, we had a DNF, but there was so many positives to take away from that. And the main one was, you know, I'm racing with my heroes. And there were some points during that race where I passed one or two of them. And that was really cool for me. And it just showed me or made me believe that I could go cup racing and be competitive.
That's awesome. And I know, thinking back to that first start for you, what do you think is the biggest difference between what you were experiencing then with that first start and maybe what drivers experience now? Or do you think there's similarities there?
I think mentally, there's probably a lot of similarities about, you know, confidence and can I do this and what's it going to be like? But I think the drivers are so much more prepared to go cup racing now when they get the opportunity. I didn't have any Busch experience or Xfinity experience. That was my only thing I'd ever raced was the baby grands and a couple of short track ARCA races. So you'd never throw a kid out there these days with that limited experience and expect much. And with testing and, or excuse me, with coming through the truck series and then the Xfinity series or whatever your situation might be. And with all the simulation, all the data they have now, we didn't have any data. We just had to figure it out on our own. So I think the human side of it, just wondering, can you do it and what is it going to be like, is probably a lot the same. But I think they're much more prepared now than we could have ever possibly been.
We're talking about your first start, but I know that there were many drivers after you that had their first starts. Is there any driver's story that kind of stands out to you when you think back?
I think I remember Brett Bodine making his first start, and he got to do it for Hendrick at the 600, and he did really good. And, you know, just a lot of guys that came along, Steve Park, I was already racing cup, and these guys come along with such great rides and we're able to perform it at a high level. That was always something that, I think was a better way. I would have been maybe more prepared to get into a really good car when I got there, had I had more experience, but I didn't. And I made it work, and it's all it's all just part of growing as a driver. But you can obviously look at Kyle Busch, and when he first showed up, you're like, holy cow, how did he learn how to drive like this? His brother, Kurt, the same. Just story after story about guys that came along that got opportunities in really good equipment right off the bat. That's what I think is most impressive about the driving these days. You've got to be on your game when you get that opportunity because, you know, the car you're getting in is good, so you better be good too.
Absolutely. And we also had Countdown to E-Day. Now, I know Kelly remembers this, but do you remember much about Dale Jr.'s first Cup Series start and kind of the buildup leading up to that start?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was really fun for me to see Dale to do what he did in the Xfinity Series and then get there for the Cup, for his first Cup start. And it was just obvious. Again, like I said, you know, he was ready, there was no doubt about it. And he was going to be able to go out and be competitive. I don't remember specifically where the first start was, but I do remember thinking, here comes another kid, Mike, that's going to be tough to beat. And he was certainly that.
Well, Michael, we appreciate the time today. And thanks for looking back on your first Cup Series start. And it was fun catching up with you.
Yeah, same to you. Thanks for having me.
Well, appreciate Michael Waltrip for his time there. And, of course, we were talking about Dale Jr.'s first Cup Series start. They called it E-Day. I know, Kelly, you know a lot about this. You remember a lot about that moment. We're going to get your thoughts, but we first going to go back to last season when Dale Jr. actually talked about this very moment, his first start, on the Dale Jr. download. So let's go ahead and take a listen.
That Countdown to E-Day was very nauseating. I even get nauseous thinking about it now, but I wasn't even that uncomfortable as I am today, right, about things like that. But you know, we were kind of like, man, we're living a life. Yeah. This is wild, right? This is freaking awesome. But it was, once we got up on, it's like walking up to a cliff. Oh, this ain't nothing. We're good. You get up there and you look down and you're like, holy shit, this is, we're high up. That was like race day was looking off the edge of that cliff going, holy shit.
So a lot of emotion there, but there really was. I mean, you can go back and read articles if you didn't live this. And there was such a buildup for his first Cup Series start because of the success that he had in the Busch Series, the Xfinity Series back then. What do you remember most about that time?
Yeah, it was, I mean, just the same thing. Like, you know, I went to all of the first few races before the Busch career started, went through the two seasons with him as the Busch Series champion there. And that 99 year kind of leading up to 2000 just was, I mean, all of that was a big deal, you know, massive at the shop with the Clydesdales coming in mm-hmm. and our family being there and the whole family being there. And, you know, it's kind of like what Dale said, you didn't really think anything of it because you're an Earnhardt, you're in a racing family. You're destined to do this, right? Mm-hmm. You're expected to do this. And then the opportunity gets there and you're like, wow, it's here.
Yeah.
And it's an opportunity that Dale never thought he would get. You know, he never thought he would drive a race car for his dad. You know, it was had to be talked into by Tony Sr. So just a really big deal. And the fact that you had Budweiser, such an iconic brand and an iconic sponsor, alongside with you, everything that they did was big. And just made it that much bigger, right?
Yeah, not only those storylines, I think it was the Coke 600, right? Yes. So he got the longest race of the year. Yeah. That's going to add some pressure to try and survive that. But he also had to qualify his way into that race. I mean, just qualifying, yes, in and of itself is always nerve-wracking. But for this moment, I mean, you couldn't let everybody down, especially a big sponsor like that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, it, you know, it makes me think about, I was thinking about not qualifying for the race because I know that's such a big deal for drivers as they're coming into making their first start. Shoot, Dale still worries about that today because yeah. he doesn't have points sometimes in the Xfinity Series. So, but at the same time, I think that you know, that expectation for you to make it wasn't necessarily there like it is mm-hmm. today, you know, but because Dale was who he is, then that expectation was there and he was in good equipment. So, yeah, really big deal. I don't think a lot of people would pick Charlotte as their first start.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But, of course, that meant a lot because that was your dad's first start as well. I don't think we'll ever see anything like that quite again either for a first Cup Series start. But, listen, we still got a lot coming up on DJD Reloaded. We got to talk with Austin Cindric and Mark Martin, so don't go anywhere.
Dalton, did you know that Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.?
Not until now.
Yeah, I'm here to tell you. They have everything that you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online. Your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever.
You know, it's nice because I'm a new homeowner, and so I don't have to worry about talking to a landscaper, have them charge me a bunch of money. I can get my trees directly from Fast Growing Trees for any yard project I want to work on.
There you go. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code Dale Jr. at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code Dale Jr. at checkout. fastgrowingtrees.com, code Dale Jr. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. The Dale Jr. download is brought to you by ZipRecruiter.
You going to any concerts this summer, man?
I am. I'm seeing a concert in June. Hardy and Kit Moore.
Love Hardy.
In Charlotte. I was so stressed getting the tickets. I'm going to be front row. I'm in the pit. When these tickets go out, man, I am online as soon as tickets open. I don't want to miss a thing.
Yeah, you know, you got to act quick.
Yes.
And when you want the best, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you're hiring for a business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. Mm. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Dale Jr.
ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Dale Jr. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/Dale Jr. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
So we've already had one Daytona 500 winner on the show. So how about another? We had to bring in a current Cup Series driver. Driver the number 2 for Team Penske. Let's go ahead and bring Austin Cindric in here. And Austin, we're talking about your first Cup Series start and a first start in the National Series. You actually have 2 experiences with this in the Truck Series back in 2015 and the Cup car in 2021. Maybe go ahead and start with the Truck Series. Take us back to that moment. How much pressure were you feeling then?
Yeah, so when I got my first Truck Series start in 2015, completely unexpected. I had done 2 ARCA races up to that point, kind of just as a one-off situation. I was racing an IMSA at the time, was doing Rallycross, had the opportunity to do a few races with Cunningham and ARCA, and those have gone well, but didn't really have anything slated past those couple races. And Austin Terrio, who's driving part-time for BKR's truck program, had gotten his back injured in Vegas, and they needed a driver at Martinsville. And, Brad and Jeremy Thompson at BKR thought it'd be a good idea to give me a shot. And this was like Wednesday before, Martinsville week.
Oh, wow.
had never driven a truck, sat in a truck, thought about it. It was very last minute. And the race went fine, but I would say the memory that sticks out to me the most, and I've given him a hard time about this before, I didn't want to be in the way. All I want to do is learn. It's a great opportunity, right? And I leave pit road, and I know Martinsville. I've watched enough racing as a kid. I know Martinsville, you're going to have hurt feelings and contact and people upset with each other. So I'm like, I just don't want to be in the way. And I leave pit road, and I'm on the track for like 2 laps, and here comes Matt Kraft, and he's obviously – several time series champion. He's, especially at the time, the guy who's the guy to beat every week. And I look in my mirror, I pull up to the top, let him go by. He blows by me and gives me the finger. I was like, oh my gosh, I've been here for 10 minutes and I've already pissed off like the best guy in the series.
Oh, so gosh.
That was really funny looking back on it, but I had no idea what I did wrong. Yeah. Truck Series, definitely a trial by fire, and a really interesting jump in for someone who really didn't do any short track racing to have their first truck start at Martinsville.
So a little bit of surprise. So that adds a little bit of pressure. Now take us fast forward to 2021, your first Cup start in Daytona. You actually won the Xfinity Series race that weekend. So you had to go into this feeling, decently confident, but compare the pressure of that moment compared to 2015.
Well, the difficult thing about 2021, starting the Daytona 500, I was additional entry. I was an open entry for Team Penske in the 33 car. And that means I had to qualify into the race, and we didn't qualify in on time. So I had to race my way in the duels, and I worked my way to the front, felt pretty good about it, got to pit road, and I sped leaving pit road. Like, I just got on the gas too early for the last section, missed it by like 0.02 of a mile an hour, something stupid like that. But I had to, come back down pit road. And and this is where things get really complicated, is the only way I made it in the race is if Ryan Preece finished in front of Ty Dillon. Ryan Preece was in a JTG car that was an open car, and Ty Dillon was in the 96, the Gaunt Brothers car. And I had to beat Ty Dillon to get in. But if Ryan Preece finished ahead of Ty Dillon, he would have raced his way in. So the next car on time would have been me. And long story short, I find Preece on the back straightaway. on the last lap and basically just shove him for an entire lap, tandem draft, and I pushed him past Ty Dillon at the line to make it into the race. So that was insane. So everything else past that was a bonus because I spent probably a handful of laps thinking that I completely ruined a great opportunity to start in the Daytona 500. So once I got into the race, it was one of the coolest experiences I had ever had. Just to run up front in my first Cup start, and I'll never forget the Gibbs guys. It was Hamlin and somebody else wanted to do a teammate restart, and I lined up well. I had Joey behind me, and Joey and I got together, and Joey tandem pushed me all the way to the lead, led the Daytona 500, and like that was like one of the coolest things like ever at the time. I'm like, this is going to be my coolest Daytona 500 memory, like, period, end of conversation. Like, leading my first one, like, awesome. Like, couldn't be beat. Little did I know, but at the time, definitely the best Daytona 500 memory I had. Obviously, the race ended quite poorly for our team, with a big fireball at the end, myself included. Two very, very cool first starts.
Yeah, a little bit of foreshadowing, I would think, because then, a year later, like you mentioned, you win the Daytona 500, the first driver to do so in that next-gen car. It was also your first full-time season as a Rookie Cup Series driver. And, I mean, that's got to be different too, right? You get a start in the old car, and then you win in the new car. How different was that transition for you at the time?
It was different for everybody. I had spent plenty – The difference with jumping into the Cup Series with, the old, pretty much the last year of the old generation car is that there's so many data points, so much, such a thick notebook for everybody. So the things that I have to study are a lot, it's just, how do I level up to be on the ground that these guys have been for the last 20 years? Whereas, the next gen car, you have nothing to base anything off of. The first time we had 40 cars in a pack was the actual race. So kind of just being able to be on the seat of your pants, learn it as you go and come up with your priorities and figure out how to execute it. And obviously got ourselves at the front with a great chance to win the thing at the end and to seal the deal was pretty incredible. But the game's obviously changed quite a lot since that first race, but it was very wild. I mean, most of that first year with the next gen car, Fontana included, like the next week, like everything's just so different, so unexpected, like not basing anything off of anything, just going in with, your best, instincts in mind and kind of just figure it out on the fly. It was pretty fun, pretty wild. I think that's why the race fans like really enjoyed like the first handful of races we did that year, just because absolutely no one, race fans included, had any idea what to expect.
Austin, we talked about with Michael Waltrip earlier, just the technology and the things that are available for drivers like yourself in today's time versus when he got his first start, whether it was the 80s or whatnot. I'm curious, I want to know your perspective on that, if you think that is helpful, because we also talked about the pressure of people like you having to perform so quickly, maybe because of those tools, and what advice you might give to up-and-coming drivers today as they look at their first start.
Yeah, I would say the biggest difference between, probably 20 years ago, being a fairly new driver, in the Cup Series, is that there was a lot of testing. I haven't been part of much testing at all. I mean, there used to be full test teams that would just go run all the time. And the drivers that were coming in would have a lot of laps in Cup Series equipment and even, in lower levels as well. And I was never really part of any of that. Half of my, stock car racing career has been the whole no practice or very little practice situation. I only did a few years of we're going to show up and have, two practice sessions, let alone, I guess Cup did three or four. Like, that's wild to think about. So the game has completely changed. So from a pressure standpoint, it's a lot more difficult, because in the races, essentially you're going to learn the most in the race, and you're going to show up to the racetrack with a setup that's going to be largely unchanged throughout the weekend, because you don't have the option to. I would say one of the main differences from, you know, probably, you know, less than 20 years ago, probably even 10 years ago, is the SMT data that we have that shows you not only the data of like me and myself, but every car in the field. And that's kind of a wild concept from a motorsport standpoint, because that doesn't really happen anywhere else, to where I can go, okay, I qualified eighth today, and, you know, Kyle Larson's on pole. Let me see every driver input that Kyle Larson put in his car that made him qualify on pole, and figure out if I need to do a better job or I need something more out of the car. To your question about what advice would I give younger drivers, it's exactly that. It's there's so much data to review instead of firsthand experience. So being able to comb through what's important to you at the time, and not overwhelming yourself. You know, I feel like I do my homework quite diligently. I feel like I put everything that I can into my preparation, but I don't drown myself in things that I don't find necessary. You know, I have to figure out what applies to me, what applies to my team. And even from having resources like teammates, you know, my entire career in the Xfinity series, I didn't have teammates at all. And now I've got two Cup Series champions as teammates. Like, obviously I'm going to have good notes, a good baseline, you know, two rabbits to chase, like, you know, but I'm also expected to perform at that level. I expect myself to perform at that level or higher, because I feel that I'm capable of that. But I am not the same driver. I don't key off of the same things that Joey Logano does. I don't key and drive my car the same way that Ryan does. So certain things that work for him aren't going to work for me. And I feel like I figured that pretty early on in my career, as I, you know, tried to reach out to Ryan and Joey and Brad about, you know, how to drive these stock cars, because I didn't have any idea what I was doing when I started, you know, racing in trucks. Even halfway through my first season of trucks, I had no idea half the concepts that I deem extremely valuable right now. And it became very obvious to me that I had to learn a lot of these lessons on my own for myself, because that's the only way you're going to really understand how to apply them. So my advice would be, do what's best for you and look at the information that best applies to yourself. Don't get lost in all of the mundane details of just, you know, if you can't figure out why something's better or worse, then there's no point in reviewing the data.
Some good perspective for some up and coming drivers. Austin, we appreciate your time so much. Good luck at Martinsville this weekend.
Awesome. Appreciate y'all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Love what he said about SMT data. I know Bubba Pollard mentioned that today, talking about the numbers, looking at that. He was like, wow, this is so cool. Yeah. And I also love the fact that Cindric can recount every moment of qualifying for the 2021 Daytona 500. I know every driver is like this, right? You ask them about a story, a race, and they recount everything. But just a good reminder of how important these moments are and how they kind of stick in your brain throughout the time.
Yeah, it is. Some really great perspective there on the testing versus, you know, the information that's available to all these guys today. Didn't really give that a ton of thought. And, you know, I think he kind of said a little bit opposite, you know, of like he said, basically, I'm not sure if all of the sim and all of that stuff is helpful. It's real world experience.
Right.
And that pretty much applies to anything that we do, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we can simulate and we can test and try and think, but until you actually do something, you don't know what it's going to be like.
Yeah, those first starts always stick out a little bit more than the others do. And we asked you this week on X or Twitter, whatever we're calling it.
I don't know either. X is just so weird.
I know, it is so weird. But we did ask you to send in some calls, some Dale calls, on what NASCAR driver's first career start stands out the most. So let's go ahead and take a listen.
It was like a year and a half before I was born, but probably Jeff Gordon. I mean, the King's last start, you know, his first start, championship race coming down between Davey and Bill Elliott and Alan Kulwicki. I can't think of anything more iconic than that.
Yeah, the Jeff Gordon. What I remember about the Jeff Gordon start was in the Busch series, he hit everything they say but the concession stand. So that's kind of my memory of Jeff Gordon starting in the first Cup series there. It's like, how is he going to do?
Yeah, I can't forget that.
He did well.
Man, I remember watching Haley Deegan's first career start at Kansas in 2019, it was so much hype, so much enthusiasm, so much excitement. I remember sitting at the edge of my seat thinking, oh my God, this girl is going to be just so incredible. And she still is incredible in the Xfinity Series now, but still that first career start when she scored that top 20 finish and 16th, amazing debut, best debut by a woman ever at a mile and a half, and the truck series to begin with. So that was definitely my favorite moment for sure.
So important for that representation. You're a woman in motorsports too, but the buildup around this, set before her too, right? I think you think of Danica Patrick in those moments, and then you see somebody like Haley Deegan come up and you're kind of reminded of that moment, that bigness, that greatness.
Yeah, I love seeing the females come into the sport. As he was talking though, it made me think about what we talked about is the expectation, you know, like mm-hmm. you're it's Haley Deegan, like she's going to come out, you know, with a win or whatever. And while he was excited about the top 20 finish, which is great in your first start, it just shows that expectation and that pressure that these people go in under their first start, and what we as the fans are looking for.
Absolutely. I think we've got one more call, so let's go ahead and get to that real quick.
Definitely Shane Van Gisbergen's start last year at Chicago, but not only because he, you know, excelled, against all the regular, you know, normal drivers, full-time drivers, but it was the hysterical, comical, whatever you want to call it, examples of everyone trying to say his name.
So that's why we say SVG.
VG, yes, we made that very easy and very quickly. But I was kind of glad that he, you know, got that start last summer at the Chicago Road Course, because it gave us a full off season to really prepare to how to say Sham Van Gisbergen.
Yes,
so yeah, it still doesn't roll off the tongue that easy.
No, it doesn't. You don't get a better start than that. Period.
Nope.
Amen. So the end.
Yeah, he takes the crown. And Dale actually had SVG on a show last year after his Chicago win and kind of got his reaction. So to kind of go along with this conversation, let's go ahead and take a listen to that clip.
Results expectations, they're obviously going to be pretty high after Chicago, but
you wouldn't miss that. Yeah. You'll win the race in your first time out.
Yeah, it's hard to go.
You're not easing on it. You're not flying under the radar.
Exactly. So I have no idea, but for sure it's going to be, you know, people know who you are now. I think half the drivers didn't know who I was. So Now I'm sure they'll see those yellow stripes and pick on me.
Going back to our conversation about expectation too, he might not have had big expectations going into that, but after winning it, everybody's going to be watching him. And I think everybody has been so far, especially in that Xfinity series.
Yeah, absolutely. He set the bar high for himself right away. So no backing down from that, but it's been fun to watch. And, you know, I think that, he gets a little, the expectations get a little cut for him, right? Because he is coming from something completely different into the sport, and we don't know who he is, so
we're still learning.
We're
that's
still
for
learning.
Sure. Yeah, I know I have a couple more opportunities in the Cup Series as well, but we've already talked to two drivers. We got one more to go. We're talking with Mark Martin coming up. We're also talking about up-and-coming drivers that you think have a good shot at a good finish in their first Cup Series start. That's ahead.
NASCAR history and heritage come alive at the NASCAR Hall of Fame. Celebrate my fellow inductees Donnie Allison, Jimmy Johnson, and Chad Knaus with their class of 2024 artifacts enshrined in the Hall of Honor. Don't miss the Ford Performance Showcase. It's a new Inside NASCAR exhibit that showcases the Ford Mustang's next-gen car through its design and innovation. The latest edition of Glory Road explores over 75 years of racing history with its cool 33-degree banking and 19 cars on display. On Mondays and Fridays, there's guided tours that take you behind the scenes with incredible stories and access to a NASCAR Hall of Fame insider. Or you can explore the hall at your own pace with the new mobile hub. It's a digital experience. Get behind the wheel of a realistic iRacing simulator. Or you can learn how fast-paced pit stops work with the Pit Crew Challenge. From the legends who shaped the sport to the new heroes earning a spot in the record books, the NASCAR Hall of Fame delivers an unforgettable experience. Book your visit to the hall today at NASCARHall.com.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky. co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
So if you've waited long enough, then you know you are about to hear from Mark Martin. I know you're ready to hear from him in this interview. He is a Hall of Famer in NASCAR. He has 96 wins across all of the series, the National Series and NASCAR. So let's go ahead and welcome Mark Martin in. And Mark, again, we're talking about these first Cup Series starts and just the emotion surrounding it, the importance of it, and kind of what you remember. So take us back to 1981, your first Cup Series start at North Wilkesboro.
Oh, yeah. I remember a lot, probably more than you want to hear about. You know, we built the car over the winter. I was living and racing out of North Liberty, Indiana, in a little one-bay shop with four race cars. So three had to be outside, but we took the car. I had never driven a big car. All I'd ever driven really that I can think of was late models. I did drive a USAC car a couple times, but took the car up to South Bend Speedway, tested it. Sure did feel like a pig to me, but you know, we worked on it, worked on it, worked on it, got it like we wanted, put it on our open trailer and jumped in our step van and drove all the way to North Wilkesboro. And I remember qualifying fifth, I think it was, and thinking, that's okay. You know, just Cale and Bobby Allison and, you know, Darrell Waltrip and, you know, Buddy, all the greats. Richard, you know, my hero, Richard Petty, all these guys were in the race. And I thought, well, that's all right. Nothing special. you know, and I had a lot to learn. You know, I didn't ask anyone in NASCAR how to set the car up. And I didn't know anyone real closely that raced NASCAR. So I didn't have anybody helping me that knew much about NASCAR. So I just set the car up like I would my late model, guessed at the spring rates and the weight distribution and all those things. And, the car was quick, but gosh, did it burn the tires off fast. And, so I remember the race starting and they started it with the green and yellow out because it was still lightly raining. And I was so freaked out about that I was scared. I've never driven, you know, I was afraid wet, I'd crash. And I'd never experienced that, didn't know about it. So this car had, of course, a rear end cooler with a electric, you know, with a toggle switch to turn on the rear end cooler. And I didn't turn it on because I didn't think we were going to race. I didn't know what we were going to do. Well, when they finally cleaned, you know, the track got dry enough to throw the green flag and they turned us loose, I'd never turned that switch on. And of course, nobody in the pits ever reminded me to turn all my switches on because we didn't have any switches in my ASA car, my late model. So it wound up being, you know, burning up the rear end gear. Of course, we stopped and we put a new gear in it so I could finish the race and learn more about my car and stuff. But car did not handle good in a race at all. And, you know, we went back home with the knowledge that we had a lot to learn.
So, Mark, throughout your career, I'm sure that you've had the opportunity to witness first starts, teammate first starts within the organizations that you ran with and those types of things. You know, what are the differences that you see throughout that process and your experience to your first start?
Well, of course, everything has changed, you know, Kelly. It's just it's amazing. I think that the first starts in today's age are in some ways a little bit easier because you have all the simulation. You can learn a lot about the racetracks from, you know, from iRacing. And then if you're lucky enough to be connected with one of the manufacturers, you can actually even spend time in the simulator, which really brings it a lot closer to real life. That kind of tool would be amazingly beneficial to going to a road course, for example, for the first time. The biggest problem that you had on going to road courses, example, would be either the Glen or even worse, Sonoma, is you don't know what's around the next corner. You know, you're going over the top of a crest and you don't know where the road goes after that. And it takes a long time to get, you know, up to speed on those kind of things. It's, you know, a smaller proportion at an oval, but still you get a lot out of it. So from that standpoint, I think you really, I think that makes it a lot easier. The thing that makes it tougher is you don't get to start most of the time in back marker equipment where people are not watching you. As long as you don't cause wrecks and you stay out of the way, you get a chance. You know, back in the old day, you would get a chance to get your experience and learn that way. Today, you start in a really good car and everybody's paying attention. And if you don't perform really quickly, you can lose your shot at, you know, at the big league.
Yeah, I was thinking about that when you said it makes it easier in my head as you started talking about those differences. I was thinking that that's probably actually harder and right. A lot more pressure, right, for these drivers because the technology absolutely helps you in today's time, but it also can be a detriment, right, because you're expected to come out, you know, quicker and better and more prepared than you guys were.
Do you think that's fair, Mark, though? Do you think that there should be more patience with these guys, give them a little bit more time, even though they do have more resources?
Well, I think that's would be on an individual case by case basis. You know, it would depend on what you saw in the person and what, if you saw progress. Certainly, you know, I mean, the patience was almost not there with Joey Logano, for example. And when I saw Joey Logano race his first time I saw him race was in a Legend car, and he was 10 years old and he was outrunning the adults. And I knew that night that he would be a Cup champion. And he was a good example of climbing the ladder really quick and then being thrust into Tony Stewart's shoes. And really it was, you know, his career was touch and go there for a while. So, you know, in his case, certainly, I think he showed enough to warrant, you know, giving him more time. But you don't have a lot of time on, you know, and Kelly knows she runs junior motorsports. I mean, there's only so long that you can wait. There's so much pressure from a performance side to be able to fund these cars that, you know, you only have so long to wait, and then you've got to do, you know, you've got to make a change. So it's tough. It was tough back in the day, no doubt about it. It was really tough to get in the sport when Rusty and I did you know, guys at that time. But it's, you know, it is a really challenging today as well in just a different way.
Yeah, Mark, that's a great point about Joey Logano, and we're about to talk about this ourselves. So before I let you go, I just want to know, are there any up-and-coming drivers that have impressed you lately? Like, who do you have your eye on right now?
Oh, gosh. Well, of course, you guys know Josh Berry for sure. I really, really like Justin Haley. I like the performances he gets. He doesn't really cause an enormous amount of trouble. He seems to bring the cars home. He seems to overperform in the equipment that he's in. And he's someone of very great interest, you know, in looking forward. For me, I'm really interested to see if he can continue to climb the ladder and, you know, and build Rick Ware Racing into even more competitive. I mean, we've seen them really stepping up their game. I love seeing what Spire is doing and what Rick Ware is doing. I'm a huge Underdog fan because my era, most all of us were Underdogs, you know, from Dale Earnhardt, to all the guys, most all of them were Underdogs at some time and drove mid-pack cars or worse to get there. And so I have a real soft spot in my heart for those guys. I'd love to see BJ McLeod be more successful. I know what an incredible race car driver he was in the late models, and I'm a big fan of BJ McLeod.
I don't think you're alone in that. A lot of NASCAR fans probably out there rooting for a lot of Underdogs in the field. Mark, we appreciate your time so much. Thank you. Good to see you.
Good to be with you guys.
So Mark had a lot of great points there. Kelly, I mean, his first start came in 1981. His first win didn't come till 1989 in Rockingham, and that's quite a bit of time. I don't know if any driver would really get that much time anymore, but again, to his point, they have more resources right now.
Yeah, that's really the point that drove home with me was just talking about in today's time how quick we are to judge, to determine talent. And his points about the Justin Haleys, I thought immediately, Justin's been in the series in Xfinity and now Cup, obviously, but he's been around for a while, longer than I think some other people get to prove their point and show off their talent. And but back in that day, I can understand why he's like that, because they all had to, and they all did, right? You know, they weren't coming into the sport until their late 20s, maybe sometimes even their early 30s, and getting that opportunity. It would take them years to seize that opportunity. So his passion for seeing those types of people get that opportunity really make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And he mentioned some of his favorite drivers, up-and-coming drivers, quote-unquote, to say as Justin Haley, Josh Berry, of course, they've already gotten their first Cup Series starts. But we asked the fans this week on hashtag Don't Hold Me To It, what are some of the up-and-coming drivers that you think are going to really have the best Cup Series start or the best finish in their Cup Series start? So let's go ahead and take a look at some of those results and some of the answers that fans had for this. So Carson Quapel, that's obviously a very relevant one for you, Kelly, especially this week. Said kid is talented, works on the cars with his dad, so he has the knowledge of what he can get out of the car. And I think that's probably a lot of what people feel about his talent, right?
Yeah, I'd liken Carson to much of Josh Berry, and the people that want to see Josh succeed is just those years in the late model stocks, those years coming up through the ranks in different types of cars. Really sets them up for a lot of success.
Yeah, some other answers here. Brexton Bush, of course, he's going to be coming up. I got a couple years there. Connor Zillich, Jesse Love, another great name out there. I think Brexton Bush, when he finally does get the opportunity, is going to be quite the buildup, I think, though, because of his dad's legacy before him. And this will be kind of that legacy driver that we haven't really seen in quite some time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought about that during Michael's interview and just thinking through, what it looks like for an Earnhardt or a Petty or a Bush or one of those really high-profile families in the sport versus, you know, not to take anything away from anybody else without that name, but it's a different feel and different pressure, you know, coming into that.
And I know we've talked a lot about it throughout this show already, but Junior Motorsports has helped a lot of drivers get their first start, and that's got to be a pretty good feeling as an owner. You've had 7 drivers get their first start with JRM. Are there any stories, any starts that kind of really stand out to you? We've talked about Bubba Pollard a little bit. That one probably stands out the most since that was most relevant this weekend. Yeah. But a lot of other good stories out there as well.
You know, I mean, the two that come to mind really are Danica Patrick and Josh Berry's. We never really thought Josh would get the opportunity. So being able to give him that opportunity, you know, in the Xfinity Series was just huge. And it's what we set our company up for when we started Junior Motorsports. Much like Mark, you know, we're about the underdog,
yeah.
and you want to give people the opportunity to succeed. So Josh's was really special, and then to see him move to the Cup Series, that's what we want as an organization. You know, we want to check those boxes and talk about all the Cup drivers that have come through the system. Danica was just crazy. I mean, yeah. For me personally, was like living out my dream, right?
Yeah.
Racing cars and having a female here. So that was just really incredible. And I mean, an immense amount of pressure for her and for this team and this organization, you know, coming off of IndyCars and her success there, and getting in the stock cars part time. You know, mm-hmm. We had her for 2 years, only 10-ish events, you know,
right.
So a difficult path for her, but very exciting. I mean, that was a great time for this company.
You mentioned that pressure that you feel. Dale kind of talked about that earlier this week with Bubba Pollard. Like, there's so many fans that are wanting him to do well, and half of that battle is the team, the setup, the car. How do you handle that pressure as an owner?
You know, from my perspective, it's a lot easier, right?
Yeah.
Because it's no different. I mean, we have four cars out there, they're competitive cars. So, you know, when you get into, okay, well, who's doing well and who's doing not, and you look at the performance of the cars, you know, we're providing the good equipment, right? So you can't really look at us. I think the pressure is just more on the driver, where they're coming from. You know, Bubba talked about that on the down low, just in terms of going out there and practicing first and then qualifying, you know, last, and just all the people that were in his corner. But yet at that point, he was like, I mean, he wanted to go behind closed doors,
right?
Because he was about to let, he was letting everybody down in his world. You know, I think that's one of the hard things in this sport. And Danica, you know, went through the same thing. I feel bad for the Haley Deegans of the world and the people like that, they need seat time. They need time. And, you know, every time they don't do as well as everybody has the expectations, you know, it just, like Mark said, it bumps them down a little bit, you know, and their opportunity shortens, mm-hmm. and their opportunity with, you know, the fans and the confidence that people have in them to be able to do the job shortens, you know.
Well, I'll tell you the coolest thing for me as kind of an outsider for Junior Motorsports is looking at the Josh Berrys, the Bubba Pollards, and realizing it's almost like the racing American dream that these guys, you know, are older than the average driver that's coming up. They're really young. They're getting their shot. But I almost got in tears listening to Bubba Pollard on the Dale Jr. Download earlier this week, because he really felt like he had missed the boat, right? That his time was over. And for y'all to be able to give him that opportunity, I mean, it meant everything for him, whether or not he gets more opportunities in the future or not. That's such a cool thing, because that's something that, you know, there used to be a lot more older drivers in the series, and that's just not the case anymore. But it's always cool to see that story.
Yeah, the Josh Berry and the Bubba Pollards of the world are the exact age as the Mark Martins and the rest of Wallace's and the Dale Earnhardts. And I think that's why fans love it so much, too. And no discredit to the kids that are coming in, like a William Byron, who, you know, came through here for a couple of years and then gets an awesome Cup ride. Mark alluded to that. But, you know, people want to see the hard work. They want to understand the dedication. They want to know that they went through the good and the bad and the ugly to get that opportunity. It makes it that much more sweeter.
Yeah, it absolutely does. Yeah. I can't wait for more stories like that to come out of Junior Motorsports and the rest of the NASCAR community. We hope that you enjoyed today's episode of DJD Reloaded. Kelly, we appreciate you joining us so much. We had so much fun today. And of course, can't forget all of the Dirty Mo content that they are constantly pumping out here. We got the Teardown with Jeff Gluck and Jordan Bianchi, DBC. You know, those guys always have a good time recapping the race. They recapped the race from Richmond this past weekend. Action's Detrimental with Denny Hamlin, the winner at Richmond. That was pretty controversial, so it was kind of nice to hear his side of things. Of course, the Dale Jr. Download, like we've mentioned, with Bubba Pollard, Speed Street, Dirty Mo Doe, and DJD Reloaded. I think Dale Jr. put it best earlier this week, Kelly, when he said, you never know what to expect with that show. So we like to keep you on your on your toes on a Thursday, and that will be the case moving forward. We'll see you next week on DJD Reloaded. Thanks, guys.
Check out Dirty Mo Media on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram.